when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good afternoon. Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. We just left a kind of a hot first hour. And as promised, we kept our promise. And the one and only Sam Dixon, our intellectual friend, he has kept his promise. He got in town. He got back in his house about an hour and five minutes ago. But the main thing is he did get to his house and we have him on. And we're going to introduce him right now. How you doing tonight, Brother Sam?
I'm doing fine. It's an honor to be on with you and all the others.
Well, the honor is deeply ours, sir. You know, with you on, you have such a broad band of knowledge. I was kind of indecisive what to do. There's 100 ways we could go with this thing. I think we try to cover two different items here. One of them, I'll tell you what we're going to do, is this item I got from Aid and Abet, the Police and Military Against the New World Order. It's the magazine that Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz, he wrote articles for the magazine, but Officer Jack McLam, he used to come on when me and James Edwards used to have the political cesspool out. We used to call the Beanfield. Those two guys used to come on the show quite often. So I think we'll do I'm having kind of a tough time deciding where to go because I know you have such a broad brand of knowledge. So I think we'll read an article of this. And then later, if you would like to, I would like to for us to cover this thing about Governor Ron DeSantis going to Israel to sign legislation in Israel combating anti-Semitism. It's a big article here. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to take off and read this right here, Brother Sam, and we'll cover as much of this as you want to. I think we could get a lot out of this. This right here, and the reason I chose this is because a couple of weeks ago we were called down, we were deplatformed, but we lost our website, we lost my ability to give emails because our web host said that we were violent, and we have a very good, highly educated webmaster who really takes good care of us. He said we really didn't. Some people said we did, but anyway, I wanted to talk about what the hell is law? What is God's law? Law of the Holy Testament, of the Holy Bible, the law of the Constitution, on and on and on. And then I'll give you my version of law in the end, and then we'll get the expert, the attorney, to get all the nuts and bolts. Hopefully we'll do that the first half hour. And second half hour, we'll be going to Governor DeSantis. So I'm going to read this right quick. Like I read it to Rand earlier. He said he didn't think it was too long. So this is an article by an officer, Rick Dalton, retired. He's probably dead now, but I think it's a great article. I'm going to read this. It has to do with law. And here we go. It says, since the beginning of organized society, humans have recognized that each of us has a right to liberty in the fullest sense of the word. Life, liberty, and property are gifts from God, and the defense of these rights is mandated by him who gave them to us. Frederick Bastiat's great book, The Law, says that law, government, was created to protect them. That's right, them being the rights. Here's Bastiat's own explanation. What then is law? It is the collective organization of the individual's right to legitimate self-defense. If each man has the right to defend, even by force, his person, his liberty, and his property, several men have the right to get together, come to an understanding, and organize a collective force to provide regularly for this defense. Under Anglo-Saxon law, the sheriff was a neutral power who was authorized to stop the seizure or confiscation of private property until the owner had the benefit of notice and an opportunity to have a hearing to defend himself. This was early due process, which was later vouchsafed in our U.S. Constitution. The idea of the sheriff as protector began in the English colonies. Originally in England, the high sheriff was an officer representing the crown. Later, families grouped together into hundreds, which were later called tuns, and finally shires. The keeper of the shire was the shiree, which became sheriff. The history of the American sheriff began when the first sheriff, William Stone, in 1664 in Virginia, in those days. In 1651, the people desired a sheriff. I'm trying to get through this quick. We're almost done. In 1651, the people desired a sheriff who would be responsible to them. That's key, to them, not to their ruler. And thus, William Waters became the first elected sheriff. Okay, it goes on down here. It says, the most important government unit became the county. I think that's key if we could ever take our country back. The counties, not the state, the most important government unit became the county. And the sheriff was the chief officer for the protection of liberties within the county. It said, it will be noticed that the term law enforcement was not used. This was because the sheriff considered himself a protector, not a punisher, a shield rather than a sword. Certainly lawbreakers feared him, but only in the role which protected the rights of those who were victimized. Hence, if you see a lot of cops nowadays, they wear their badges like a shield. Well, what do you, I agree with you, Sam. That's a lot of dribble nowadays. Like you said, it's old time, it's past. Could you give us a little, if you can, a little synopsis on what you think about that, the history of law, and bring it up to where we are today. And I guess if I'm not loading you down too much.
That's a big topic. Give us 2 months to talk about.
I'm sure you can do it.
Well, I think those are very, very attractive words. But attractive words are often misleading. This country was started by a document that got us off to a very bad start called the Declaration of Independence. And there was, other than the fact that it's a document that's full of lies about the monarchy and the British, there were two things that were wrong with the Declaration of Independence. The worst was the beginning that all men are created equal. Yeah, this is insanity beyond anybody's imagination, the way it's taken today. I know the defenses of Jefferson that, oh, he didn't mean it that way, and so on. But any kind of equality is crazy. I've never met a human being in my life who was equal to any other human being. We're all different. And there's no such thing as equality. Nature knows no such thing as equality. In any species and anything, even rocks are not equal. When you start out with something that crazy, it's no wonder that we end up with the wreck that we're living in today. And the second was not quite as bad, but it was still bad. And that was that all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And you hear people say this all the time, conservatives, people on our side, who think that sounds wonderful. God gave us our rights. Well, I'm sorry, but God did not give us our rights. Our rights came from our Anglo-Saxon ancestors. Our Bill of Rights is the template for our Bill of Rights was the Declaration of Rights in around 1690 in the Glorious Revolution in Great Britain, in which the new king was required to sign a statement recognizing the traditional rights that Anglo-Saxons had won for themselves and their children and their families over centuries of living and fighting with each other in the island of Great Britain. And these rights did not come from God. They came from our historic, concrete experience. I don't say that as an atheist. I'm not an atheist. I'm a believer. But I think that in order for things to be correctly organized, it's necessary to speak the truth. And those words are very grandiloquent. A lot of them are historically false. The king appointed the sheriffs. The sheriffs basically, many times, were agents of the monarchy. In Charles I's reign, they pressured the parliamentary elections to try to return Parliament that the king could control. So it's really, they're inapplicable to our situation. One of the things I think is very important to grasp is that you cannot evaluate political philosophies in the abstract. We're not living in utopia. Any kind of political idea has to be examined in terms of what is happening on the ground, where people are at that moment. You know, and we don't do that. You have these fanatics like the French Revolution or the Bolsheviks or the American Constitutionalists who believe that you can put the same form of government into various different historical settings and it would work. It won't work. But Russia broke free of the horrific rule of the Mongols. You know, you want to know real horror. You read the story of what it was like to be a white Christian under the control of the Mongols. Russians experienced that for two centuries being under the control of the Mongols. And they finally broke through with the leadership, broke free under the leadership of a guy who basically founded the Russian monarchy. His name was Dmitry Donskoy, the Grand Duke of Muscovy. And he was able for the first time in centuries to lead European Christians to defeat the Mongol horde. But he did that because only by having absolute power of life and death over everybody in the country. You couldn't do that with states' rights. You couldn't have people in Novgorod questioning what Moscow was saying. You couldn't have people making up their own minds in every little county of Russia. The historical imperative was for the Russians to run these yellow people out of their country and get country back. And that could only be done with a very powerful centralized government.
Sam, my brother, we got to go to first commercial break. We'll be right back, brother.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging out. I'd just like to say one more time, this whole program tonight has been dedicated to our former co-hosts and brothers, Matt Goodwin, Jacob Tyler, and Lee Cochran. I've told you all in the beginning, Matt, myself, and Lee primarily financed the show for the first couple of years, and Jacob Tyler was our webmaster. They had to leave for various persons, but I'd just like to remind you that's who tonight's program is dedicated to, and we have an incredible intellect on the night, Sam Dixon, and he's a warrior too. He's not one of these. Sam Dixon, he's what I call a warrior poet, as opposed to what I call used to be on James's show, the dead poets who would get up there and just, you know, bray and bray and bray. Anyways.
Wash all the flattery off. I'm a very humble person. I'm a very humble person with a lot to be humble about.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got a lot to be humble about, too.
I appreciate people putting up with me. But get to where we were. The idea of states' rights is so dear to the hearts of so many of our people. It just won't work. It wouldn't have worked for the Russians in the time of the Mongol hordes' occupation of Russia, and when Dmitry Donskoy led them to victory over the yellow people and broke these whites free in 1380 in the Battle of Kulikova Field. And it didn't work in the Netherlands when the Netherlands were fighting for independence from the Spaniards during the Reformation. They had states' rights. And because of states' rights, the war for independence extended out over a period of about 80 years because they could never have an effective military leader. The military leader's plans were always being thought of being reversed by some province. You know, Zeeland would decide that, no, we don't think the soldiers should go and besiege Antwerp. Or, you know, we think the general is wrong. And the Spaniards were led by an autocrat, and they could put all their soldiers at one point and prevail. You know, so the situation that we're in today is utterly different from Anglo-Saxon England in the 800s or 1200s or 1400s. And it's utterly different from where the colonists were in 1775 or where the South was in 1861. We are in a fight for our lives. These people that control and rule us hate us. They want us dead. They would happily herd us out into the Katyn woods like Stalin did the Polish officer corps and put a bullet in the back of our heads. I think they would happily do that. These people like AOC and the others in Washington, these people despise us. You know, they're tearing down our monuments. That's just the beginning. First the monuments, then the people, although they've already torn the people down in many respects. But when you're in a fight for your life, these elegant rules like states' rights and sheriffs being independent and the Bill of Rights, these things no longer matter. It's the same in ordinary fighting. You probably were a much tougher kid than I was. I would try to talk my way out of fights in high school until it was either fight or be deemed a coward by my friends. But I've never been a guy that enjoyed fights. But you know, I took a little boxing and stuff, and you know, you're taught the rules laid down by a guy that drew up the rules of boxing called the Marquis of Queensbury. And they're very nice. You don't gouge the other guy's eyes out. You don't stomp him in the crotch. You don't kick him in the kidney. And this kind of thing. And you can do that. Those are great rules when you're a 10th grader boxing in phys ed class with another kid who's another 10th grader who looks like you. And when phys ed is over and it's time to eat lunch, you're going to be eating lunch with him in the school cafeteria. But when you're walking through downtown Los Angeles or Chicago or Atlanta, and these urban youths grab you and drag you into an alley, the rule, if you obey the rules of the Marquis of Queensbury, you're going to die because you're in an alley fight against people that want to kill you. And you can gouge his eye out, and you can stomp on him in the crotch, you can hit him in the kidney. And that's what we're in now. Our enemies have made it clear to us. They use that Bill of Rights and freedom of speech as a way to deceive and demoralize and subvert our society. Now that they're in power, none of those rules matter anymore. They are happily purging people like Tucker Carlson from the airwaves. They're happily deplatforming you. They are indicting these kids up in Charlottesville. You know, 6 years after the incident, they're indicting them on some kind of cuckoo, far-fetched law that they lit objects with an intent to intimidate people. They carried burning torches, something that has been part of American history from the very beginning. We've always had torchlight parades. But that wretched Soros DA knows if he can get these guys in front of a Charlottesville jury where they voted 75% for Hillary Clinton, that the juries don't convict these people. They would convict you and me of murder for talking on this broadcast.
Yes.
The DA said, we want to be convicted for murder and set the electric chair. These people in Washington, D.C., and in Charlottesville, the ones that are sitting in the jury on Trump in New York, they would have to say, oh, we find them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of murder because they talked on the telephone, they talked on the radio, on the internet, on May 6th, 2023, and the DA's proved his case. You know, these people, they've denied bail. The Bill of Rights says that the right to bail is a fundamental right in the Bill of Rights. They gave bail in the 1960s to a Soviet spy named Robert Soblin, who promptly defected to the Soviet Union. But a communist spy, they would give bail to. But they won't give bail to these people that were up there in this demonstration on January 6th. And, you know, most of whom never set foot in the Capitol. They're prosecuting like 800 or 900 of them. They have a number of 1,800 that they want to identify and apprehend and prosecute. These guys have no chance of getting acquitted in front of a Washington, D.C. jury, and they're being denied bail. They've been sitting in jail now for 2 years. Think about it. Think back when you were 22, 25 years old, maybe starting a family. If somebody put you in jail for 2 years, what would that do to your life history? For 2 years, denied sunlight, exercise, you know, run down, serve this atrocious, unhealthful food, threatened, beaten, you know, unable to earn a living, your house foreclosed. That's what these people, like Liz Cheney, Joe Biden and Blinken and you know, all of them, that's what they are capable of doing. They hate these people. They're happy to know that they're ruining their lives. They would like to ruin the lives of everybody that's listening to this today. Have chosen their rules. They've chosen the rules. The freedom of speech means nothing. Right to bail means nothing. Right to a fair trial means nothing. They have chosen their rules, and if the tables ever turn, we need to feed it back to them. They need to be judged not according to our rules, but according to the rules they have chosen, and that's what we need to tell them if that day ever comes. You chose the rules. We now try you the way you tried us. You know, as I said to a group of people in Leave the South meeting a year or so ago, if we have another civil war, this time we need the Abraham Lincoln and let them have Jefferson Davis.
Yes.
I know that's blasphemy among us others, but that's the fact of the matter.
Lincoln knew how to get it done, so did it. Go ahead, Sam.
Go ahead. Speak.
Oh, okay. You know, I'm glad. You know what? God works in mysterious ways. This show, no matter what I do, if I think I'm not that prepared, it just always falls into line. But you have laid it out perfectly. You know, we could talk. You could take whole courses. You could go to college for 4 years. And just like you said, when you take all these, I've had political science course, one or two of them. You've had probably 50 of them. And we can just study the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, all this stuff, like you said. But you know what, Sam, and I'm not nearly as eloquent as you are, but in other words, it's just a lot of crap. It's just a lot of horse dung in a burlap sack if it's not backed up with the gun. And with the bayonet, with the sword. You know, George Washington said it. We're going to a break. But George Washington said before we go to break, government is not reason. It is not eloquent. It's force. Like fire, it's a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Never for a moment should it be left to irresponsible action. Anyway, folks, we have to go to our first break. Be right back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens,
Pursuing Liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm John Schaefer. President Biden said he's the only choice in 2024 because he's smarter than most Americans.
I know more than the vast majority of people. I'm more experienced than anybody's ever run for the office. And I think I've proven myself to be honorable as well as also effective.
In an interview on MSNBC, Biden, who's now 80, was addressing why his age isn't a factor to hold the job of president. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is sending quick response teams to a state's southern border ahead of Title 42 expiring on Thursday. Abbott is expecting a huge surge of illegal immigrants to stream across the border once the COVID-era policy is no longer in effect. They're celebrating in London after King Charles III was officially crowned. The historic coronation took place at Westminster Abbey for Charles and Queen Camilla.
Bless, we beseech thee, this crown, and so sanctify thy servant Charles, upon whose head this day thou dost place it for a sign of royal majesty.
The coronation comes nearly 8 months after the death of Queen Elizabeth II. The favorite in this year's Kentucky Derby has been scratched. Forte will not be racing, and for owner Mike Rapole, it seems all too familiar.
I'm devastated about my friends and family back at the hotel, who I need to tell that we have to scratch the Derby favorite. It's almost deja vu all over again.
In 2011, he had to withdraw Derby favorite Uncle Mo the day before the race for what turned out to be a rare liver disease. Forte has been scratched due to a bruised foot. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is the latest Republican to join the call for spending cuts to be the only way the debt ceiling is raised. McConnell joined 40 other GOP senators in signing a letter that was sent to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, saying the debt ceiling will not be raised unless there are budget reforms. The U.S. could default as early as June. This is USA News.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, traffic, weather, sports, and a community connection. It's the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. It's critical that we keep AM radio in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress we need AM radio in cars. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you test and inject daily, you may qualify. Call U.S. Med now to learn more.
800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. That's 800-471-7065.
The Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we're right back with the one and only Sam Dixon. We were asked with a bunch of questions we could ask him, because you can see the man's a brain. You know, he talked about, and here's some of the few things we talked about during the break. Sam mentioned the Mongols. I think he said that the Mongols, they destroyed something like, I think, 90% of the European population of Russia. He said that Russia used to be a part of Europe, and the Mongols were so, they spread terror like you would not believe. And I agree with Sam. That's what they want to do with us here in this country. If they ripped, the Mongols ripped Russia away from Europe, he named this battle. I think he said 1380, I'm not sure, but they had a battle where the Europeans finally defeated the Mongols, and that's when, I don't know if that's before or after Peter the Great, whatever, but I was going to ask Sam, if the Mongols were to the Russians, are our blacks to white Southerners, are they to us what the Mongols were to Russia? There's some of the questions I'd ask him. He can take off on that. Rand also asked a question. He said, well, Sam so eloquently said, and it makes a lot of sense, that states' rights were like a, it's almost like a Trojan horse. It's almost like a slow-acting poison. That's my words. That they were they could be the death of us. He said that in defeating Sam said that in defeating the Russians, the white Russians, and defeating the Mongols, the fellow who did it had absolutely, he was, his law, he was God Almighty. His law was be that it was the end all. And they couldn't have possibly defeated those Mongols if they'd had 5 or 6, 15, 20 different generals saying, no, I think we should do it this way, you should do it that way. And then this leading, all this babble I'm giving, this psychobabble I'm giving you, leads up to the question that Rand said. Rand asked Sam during the break, if for the providence of God, if God was to smile upon us and we could break away and have a southern independence, could we get by with states' rights, or would the states' rights be the death of us? And that's where we'll go over to Sam, and Sam can comment on any of these things I mentioned, and including the states' rights things. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, man asked that question, and it's a very important one. It's a critical question. Could the South break away and set up a limited government with states' rights? And the answer, I think, is no. We are in a demographic situation that is a matter of life and death. You know, in Georgia now, over 40% of the population is non-white, and almost half of that is immigrant non-white. These people are not going home voluntarily. You know, and the majority of children under the age of 18 in Georgia are non-whites. Breaking away from the federal government will accomplish, I'm sorry to say this, but it will accomplish very little. You know, I'm a Southerner. I self-identify as a Southerner. I'm sitting here in my living room looking at a Confederate bomb that's framed across my living room. And there's a picture of Debra Pickens, who was my ancestral paternal cousin, who lit the fuse for the first cannon shot at Fort Sumter.
Wow.
And I am a Southerner. But the fact is that our fight here is not regional. Our fight is demographic. It's our tribe versus their tribe. And the blacks are not Mongols. They are simply a competing group competing for turf. They're competing for control of America, as are the Hispanics and the Asians, to the great extent the Jews. But there's a whole coalition ranged against us of minority racists. The organized minorities are all the ones I just mentioned. And their commanders are basically communists. They're Bolsheviks. They're completely ruthless. They will do whatever they can to destroy us the way Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin were willing to do anything possible to destroy the European Christian element in Russia. And we are in a desperate fight. And if we come out on top, we're going to need to have strong leadership to make these people go home and go away. And they have to go home
yes.
and go away. We have to have our state. We have to have a separate state, an ethno-state, which is quite reasonable. People say, oh, that's just outrageous. And I tell them, why? No one has any problem with the Jews running an ethno-state in Israel and demanding that we finance it and support it.
Bingo.
How are they entitled to an ethno-state and we are not entitled to one? We're asking only for what they demand for themselves. That's all we're asking for. You and I have no right to immigrate into Israel. We can't go there except as tourists on a very short term, and then we have to get on the plane and go home. Only Jews can move to Israel. And yet in America, the Jewish community overwhelmingly insists that everybody in the world should be allowed to come to America, and it's racist for the founding stock of America to say that we should be protected by not being colonized by the Third World.
You know, Sam, I'll tell you what, you said some things that I've always said, you know, and Rand can tell you this. And matter of fact, I've said it just today. I've probably said it 75 times. We have people come on here and, and they talk about the South, the wonderful South. And you know, we have the League of the South. And actually, on this program right here, we dedicated the entire month to White / Confederate History Week, History Month. Matter of fact, we had 5 weeks of nothing but white history / Confederate history, honoring whites, honoring the old Confederacy, honoring the South. So the South is near and dear to our heart, and we just break out in crocodile tears when we see those old Southern flags and we see Watch It Gone with the Wind. But, like I've told Rand, this is leading to a point, believe it or not. I've always said, especially you know, you and I, we've lived through probably, we probably saw the Old South die, because I remember when I went to school, grammar school, it was, and I went to a rough school, and it was you would get your lights punched out if you said anything good about a Yankee. You know, you people identified as rebels. We were not having the Yankees in this school, but now you don't see that. In Memphis, Tennessee, where I am, I would say if in the certain parts of the city, they're all self-hating whites, conservatives, race mixers, atheists, homosexuals. And it's like that in most every large southern city I know. So I've told Rand and people like that, you can correct me if I'm wrong, southern, what we identify as southern in the old south, I'll say prior to 1950 maybe, it's a state, southern is a state of mind, it's a state of the heart. You nailed it, Sam. It's not, we don't need an independent South. We need an independent white ethno state. I don't care if you live in Bangor, Maine, if you live in Northern California, or if you live in Idaho, if you live in Chicago, if you're a white man and you love yourself, you love your wife, your children, your parents, your grandparents, you love being white, you greet with, you are part of the ethno state. Way to go, Sam. I could not agree with you more than that. Don't get me wrong. I love the South. I was born in the South. We all have ancestors that most of us that fought in the Lincoln's War. But you nailed it, Sam. I could not agree more. The only way we can survive is with ethno state. And also, you said something dear to my heart, Sam. We have to get these invaders, these migrants in here, these people that come in here, and we hear these. I'm a recovering Baptist, recovering Southern Baptist. We have to give these people a safety net. Well, they've turned the damn safety net, Sam, into a hammock where they're just laying and sucking the blood of the white workers in this country right here. We have to get those people the hell out of this country, and I don't care how we do it. Back to you, Sam.
And we have to subordinate private rights to the health of the community. You know, the common good should come ahead of individual self-interest. We cannot tolerate titans of capitalism what's his name, Zuckerberg. These captains of big business that have betrayed us. Big business has no place in our society, in our future ethnostate. The will not tolerate private property being used against the interests of our people. And we can't do that. You know, that's just common sense. You can't do that. The interests of the community, workers need to be protected. The American worker has been just screwed over tremendously. I'm amazed that there's not been some kind of revolution. You know, they've lost their pension. They lost their health care. They've lost one thing after another and just been ground down. And then the jobs that remained have been given over to cheap labor that big business has brought into America. It's a wonder that we haven't had guillotines erected in the public squares and the ruling classes taken to the guillotines. It's just Marie Antoinette comes across as
yes,
a do-gooder compared to American capitalists.
Sam, with that, we have to go to our last break. I can't believe our last break's up. When we come back, I'll make another comment and bring you back in because we've got a billion questions to answer. Folks, we'll be right back. This is our last segment of the second hour. We'll be right back with the one and only great Sam Dixon.
Fighting for the soul of liberty and true pursuit of happiness for everyone. Freedom Fest 2023 is coming to the home of the blues and birthplace of rock and roll, Memphis, Tennessee, July 12th through 15th. It's the ultimate summit for liberty, educating and empowering through art, music, film, and comedy, while promoting economic freedom and highlighting today's political issues. Use promo code ROUND50 to save $50 off the current rate. Reserve your spot at freedomfest.com. See you in Memphis.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we have James from Ferguscum, Missouri. Not my words, he told me in Ferguson, Missouri, he calls it Ferguscum. He's a great friend, he's a good supporter. He has a question for the one and only Sam Dixon. Go ahead, James.
Mr. Dixon, there's one nation that's been in existence continuously the longest, and their coming of age ceremony is to have a legal dissertation before their community. They're all about the law and how it can be used. Right now, we're in a situation of triage. We've got to save what can be saved first, and then we can argue about where these laws came from and the intricacies and so on and so forth and whether they're any good. I personally am an atheist. I'm not a pederast, and I'm not a whoremonger, believe me. But I have to come together for my people, and that's the situation we're in right now, and I want to encourage everybody, don't be discouraged from participating in this effort just because you hear Eddie Cran or whatever. Okay, we've got to come together and save what can be saved now. Comments?
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much, James from Ferguscum. Go ahead, Sam. Go ahead, fella.
Well, we are in a desperate situation, but we also need to think clearly about how we get out of it and what we do when we get out of it. You know, we need a plan. It's a great step forward to have people start talking about the ethno-state, because until that, nobody ever really had any plan at all. It was just a matter of what I call the game of ain't it awful, of exchanging examples of terrible things that were done by non-whites to whites and trying to trump each other with these stories. But, you know, no, I think we have to have a plan. We have to think things through. We don't want to have to be thinking on the spur of the moment on questions like who fits into our community and, you know, what do we do about capitalists who are exercising their private power to harm the community. So I think we need to think through these things now, and we do need a plan. But I also think that what he's saying is true. He says he's an atheist, and I know many atheists, and many of us atheists are often very fine people. They live moral lives. And we have to have a pretty broad, open society. I've said my test for determining who would be qualified for citizenship in our new ethnostate would be that anybody whose ancestors were all of Nicene Creed Christians in 1492 will be acceptable. And that's kind of arty, but the Nicene Creed was drawn up the 300s, the basic statement of Christian theology, and it was accepted by all the five major branches of Christianity. prior to 1492, the only people that had those, that Nicene Creed, were white Europeans. But, you know, as white Europeans, we share a lot. We are Southerners. That makes us a little different from others. Germans are different from Frenchmen. But we're all part of a cultural family. A Russian teenager who looks at a picture of the Parthenon in a classroom in Vladivostok knows what the Parthenon is, and he knows it's part of him. A white teenager in Atlanta who looks at a picture of the Parthenon in his school, the same reaction. And when I went to Europe the first time, I was in Milan in Italy, and it dawned on me that I had far more in common with the Italians and Catholics in Milan than I do with black Protestants in Atlanta. They may live in the South, but I can live more easily with Sicilian Italians or Germans or Swedes or Spaniards. I have more in common with them than I do with non-whites in America.
I can totally agree with that. I've done a little traveling in my time. Some of it was involuntary. When I got drafted eons ago, but I was on R&R. I've got to go through not very long. We got to go to Germany and Austria and down to Italy. And I second that. They all looked white to me. They certainly did. But Rand, you've been hanging on patiently, my brother. Do you have a question you can sum up that get quickly, concisely, et cetera, you have for Sam?
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd like to say, Eddie, thank you for giving me a moment, but I'd like to say
sure.
Mr. Dixon's commentary is very sobering, to say the least. And I think he's right when he more or less said that most of us, most have already been defeated. They've already gave in. I don't think many are up to the fight, But that would go back to that remnant.
We're not fighting for our people as they are today. We're fighting for them as they once were, and as we hope someday they may be again. But these people, Rand, have been stripped of everything. And this is probably a good way to end the broadcast. We'll probably take this out. But one of the most memorable conversations I had in my life was back in the 1960s. And I met two people from Hungary. I knew them and met them through our work, our cause. And they were Count and Countess Andrássy of Hungary. And they're the number one family in Hungary. The main boulevard in Budapest is now named Andrássy Boulevard. And Count Andrássy's grandfather was the foreign minister of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy. So they were big-time people. But they were living in comparative poverty, in a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment in Coral Gables in exile from Sovietized Hungary. And I asked them, I said, it must be very difficult for you to have had to give up everything that you own. You've lost everything. How do you cope with that? And Countess Andrássy told me something which is really something. She said, no. First of all, she didn't want to criticize America. I put it pressure-dressing. You can say whatever you want. I like people to speak frankly. And said, well, we have not lost everything. She said, we have our country, we have our people, we have our country, we have our literature, we have our language, we have our religion. They were very devout Roman Catholics. She listed all these things. We have our music, we have our pain, we have our culture, we have everything. So the only thing we have lost is our money. But she said, you Americans have lost everything except your money. You've lost your families, you've lost your country, you've lost your pride, you've lost your race, you've lost your dignity, you've lost your culture. And the day will come, as it comes to all nations, when Americans will lose their money. And she said, when that happens, Americans will be the most bankrupt people in the history of the world.
That's the most profound statement I think I've heard in many a day. I swear. And Sam, before we run out of time, go ahead, Sam.
That's it.
I have a final question. And I don't know a lot. You know, we've always been pro-German, pro-1930s German in this show and pro-40s. You may know more about the nuts and bolts of National Socialism in Germany after Adolf Hitler took it over. There's, you know, and probably, I don't know, 70, 80% of all the Germans that voted, they voted Hitler in year after year, et cetera, et cetera, to my knowledge. I may be wrong there. But he got the vast majority of the votes. And to your knowledge, you may not know, what does National Socialism look like that the people seem to love it? You talked about we can't have strong states' rights. I see the practicality of that. We need a strong leader because we're in the fight for our life. At that time, after the First World War, I don't know in the history of the world, in the modern world anyway, say for the past 400 years, no nation was under more duress, under more threat, bigger threat of being totally exterminated through nothing else, through hunger. And Hitler and the National Socialists, the so-called Nazis, brought them out of devastation. What kind of government, what would National Socialism look like in a white ethno state, to your knowledge, Sam? You may not know that. What would you like to comment on that?
Well, that's beyond my ability to partake or comment on. You know, you can't touch the German example of 1933 to 39. Our people are so indoctrinated with the establishment narrative on World War II. It's breaking down a little, but it's so strong that you just alienate yourself from our people by trying to talk about that. But, you know, I think one of the things that they had, the principles, like I said before, that they had, which was right, and which would be the guiding principle, would be the common good before individual self-interest. And American conservatism has always put individual self-interest ahead of the common good. And that just doesn't work. That's not a healthy society. We're members of people. Aristotle said man is a social animal. One of the most foolish things that Nietzsche ever said was the strong man is strongest alone. No, the strong man alone is impotent. He's isolated. He's atomized. You have to be part of a people. And that's one great thing that's left us as Southerners. We still have the feeling of being a people, and I don't think that exists in the rest of the country. I can drive from Richmond, Virginia to San Antonio, Texas, all through these different states, and that there is this unconscious, subconscious sense that we are a people. And that's something we Southerners enjoy that other people, I don't think America, they don't have that. They don't have that community identification.
You know, I would tend to agree, and I would say we have some supporters way north of the Mason-Dixon line, and a lot of those people, we met with some. I won't say his name on the air. You know him. He's an attorney from up north, and he was really kind to me and my daughter when we ran the marathon last year. They rented this really nice German restaurant in Manhattan, and those people, and I was kind of embarrassed because they. If you have a radio program, or if you're known in any of all, they look up to you like you're some kind of a, I don't know, celebrity or god or something. I don't know, but they revere the South. Go ahead, Sam.
You've done your work. You've earned your laurels.
They say, and I told them we're not the South we used to be. As a matter of fact, this is another going back to when I got drafted back in 67. We had a fellow from Minneapolis, St. Paul. He honest to God, Sam, he thought we still lynched blacks in the South. He came in the Army. I know this is a rabbit trail. He came into the Army, a bleeding heart liberal, this little 5'8", blue-eyed blonde, small built fellow, took basic training, at Fort Benning, Georgia, really under a bunch of blacks. He saw what a black was up close and personal. I went to medical corps training with him. I was combat medic. And then we departed after that. But he was a rabid. He would make us look tame. He overnight, he would turn into a raving, almost like a lunatic, you know, compared to us. Sam, we've run completely to the end of the hour. God bless you. This has been incredible. You always fill our from wall to wall. Thank you so much, brother. It's been wonderful.
I appreciate people listening to me. I get tired of listening to me. I often find myself in bed at night calls. Are other people as sick of listening to you as I am?
Well, we're going to bring on the bitter ender Gene Andrews on and Monica Schaefer, the Braveheart. We're going back to them. So thank you so much, Sam. Thank you again. Bro. I'll stay in touch and do the same, please. People, you just got through hearing the great one and only Sam Dixon. Now we're going to transition to the third hour. We're going to pick up Gene, the bitter ender, and Miss Monica Braveheart. Be right back, folks. Get you some coffee.